review it, but just simply let me say that we want to deal with rebuilding marriages today. And you may think, well, this isn't for me. We're still hanging in there. We're still together. We're going to grin and bear it, or grit our teeth and bear it. We're still together. So the lesson today doesn't pertain to me. But let me say this. Oh, yes, it does. For this simple reason. Marriages get to the place where they stagnate. They get kind of stale. You know, you look at him and you think, I've looked at that mug over that table for the last 20 years. Same old mug. The mug is longer, but it's the same mug. And you look at her and you say, there, I've looked at that same jug the last 20 years. The jug is wider. The same old jug. I asked a man one day over in New Zealand about his marriage, and he said, well, we're at the chalk and cheese stage. The man was a New Zealander, and I thought, chalk and cheese stage? And I thought, well, I don't quite know what you're saying, but I get the point. You know, he was saying, you know, how would you like to chew up that piece of chalk? Anybody? You know, well, it won't kill you, but you're not going to get very fat on it either, and I doubt that any of you are going to go out for dinner and order a plate of chalk. No. And cheese, well, that's good, but it gets pretty, you know, it kind of sticks to the roof of your mouth, and it gets kind of, yeah, it's like peanut butter. Peanut butter's good, but by itself, you know, it's not all that hot, neither is cheese just by itself. But anyway, he said chalk and cheese stays. I think marriages can stagnate, and they need revitalizing. Oh, somebody gave me a cartoon last night. I hadn't thought about using it, but this cartoon showed a marriage counselor was written on the door, on the wall there. And the marriage counselor is saying, the two people he just dismissed, this husband and wife, there he's just tearing off after, and she's just grinning like a Cheshire cat. And he's after, you know, the thing's been put back together, and they're on their way. And the marriage counselor said very calmly, next. And that's what, so marriages sometimes need revitalizing, and that's what I'd like to do today. But don't tear out of here. You're liable to run over somebody. Let's wait, and you can go home and enjoy yourselves and enjoy rebuilding your marriage. It's going to take longer than today to do it, but I'm going to put you on the track of some things today that will help. We all desire a meaningful family life. A friend of mine in Memphis, Tennessee told me once, he said, I have for years left my home each morning, driven down the road a few blocks, stopped the car, gotten out, leaned over in the ditch, and vomited everything I had on my stomach. He said that came simply and purely because my home life is so terrible. The man was a successful businessman, but he did it in spite of his home. Thank God his home has been corrected. The relationship has been mended. The marriage has been rebuilt. It's been revitalized. And the problems there have been corrected. But how would you like, and perhaps you have, left home in the mornings when things were so topsy-turvy and so in a state of confusion and the strain and all between you and your wife was such that you'd just literally go away thinking that you'd have to vomit and perhaps would be so upset that you'd have an ulcer in your stomach. Well, it can happen. Your marriage needs to be revitalized and revised and revived. Now, we all desire meaningful family life. This was found in one of the recent surveys that more people stated when they were asked the question, what do you want more than anything else in the world? More of them asked this one thing than any other thing. They said, we want a meaningful family life. And that either meant with mother and father, with brothers and sisters, or with husband and wife, but they said, we want meaningful family life. And I've put it over here in this word, loveship. We all want this, whether it's with mothers and fathers, as I said, or whatever. But we're talking now about husbands and wives. This is what we really yearn for. And you know, men, if you've got this working, if you've got your family working right, if you've got the relationship between you and your wife working right, there isn't anything you can't do. Man, you can go out and sell anything in the world. You can go out and do anything in the world. But if this isn't right, you're just washed up pretty well. If my wife and I if we're not clicking it off, and I don't mean we have to be, you know, up on that mountain peak all the time, but I mean there can't be anything standing between me and her We've got to be right. We've got to be clear in our communications, or else I'm not worth 2 cents. I just close up shop and go home and say, honey, I can't do any work until we get this thing straightened out. We've got to get it right. And so we will, because I'm not worth anything, and she knows I'm not. Now, we all have acquaintances. We all have acquaintances. In fact, in the transient, rootless society that we live in today, that's about all we do have. You know, it's very difficult today to develop friendships. Young people, your mamas and daddies many times move so often that you don't really have time to develop real lasting friendships. Oh, you have these acquaintances, and you make acquaintances at school this year, and then sometimes we move. You know, the average American family moves every 2 years. You realize that? Are you aware of the fact that the proportion or the rate of turnover in marriages is almost coming down to that same number? We just about change mates on the average about every 2 years. Well, acquaintances, we've got a lot of them. Neighbors, yeah, but they're just acquaintances. They're not real friends. They're not over here in this area of loveship. They're not those kinds of neighbors that just literally will stand by you to the very end and you'll be thinking about them from now on for 20 years. That's not the kind of associations we have. And many people go through life with just acquaintances, never coming over here to this area here, but that's what we want. We'll tolerate this over here because we're like cows. We're there together. You've got to get along with people. You've got to not graze where they're grazing. You've got to recognize that they're grazing there and you graze over here. But those are just acquaintances. And you moo at each other every once in a while across the fence, you know, but they're just acquaintances. When it comes to wives and husbands, many times we end up with just an acquaintance. Now, we all marry for physical attraction. If you were not physically attracted to your wife, you wouldn't have married her. You know, if she was ugly as homemade sin, you wouldn't have married her. If she had stood there in this old dress, you know, that was lopsided, and she had snuff running down her mouth, and she smelled, you know, if you had to stand upwind of her, you couldn't have stood the smell, and would you have married her? I doubt it. Man, you liked the way she smelled, and you loved the way she dressed, and her hair was just right, and her beautiful teeth, and all about her, there was something that, and the freckles, it may, you know, and a lot of things are pretty to some men that aren't pretty to others. I'm glad. One old fellow said, every man to his own, as the fellow said, he'd kiss the cow, but I'm glad that some people think you're pretty. You know, I don't think you're all that pretty, some of you ladies, but your husband does. If he hadn't, he wouldn't have married you. Yeah. And I'm glad that there weren't all that many men chasing my wife. I would have lost out. Because I ain't all that much to look at either. I ain't no moving star, as a fellow said. But there was some physical attraction, and it's usually an intertwinement of physical and personality, the whole aura that is cast by this person when he walks in the door or when she walks into the room. There's something about her that you say, that's for me. And you want that. All right? Now, this is an area that we're all aware of. But you know, when, as I mentioned before, when the butterflies start flying in formation, and I mean by that when they quit just going completely haywire every time you see her, they're still there, but when they start flying in formation, and when you wake up some morning and look over in the bed at that body lying there, and you really all of a sudden realize that there's a person in it, and you look over there and you just now realize that there's somebody in that thing, do you like him or not? Do you like her? Do you like what you see in her? Do you like the person that's inhabiting that body? Many people, when they get to that point where it's the chalk and cheese stage, or when the butterflies are flying in formation, or when they finally looked inside that thing and find that there's a person living in there, they don't know what to do with it, because all they've ever had is an acquaintance, and that acquaintance has mostly been physical, and they never have arrived over at this point where it's real loveship. It's always been just an acquaintance. And when that time comes, something needs to be done. What is it? Well, he says you are joint heirs of life, as we noticed in the last lesson. We're joint heirs of life. We're partners in this thing. She's not your employee. As we said last hour, if you were having to pay her as an employer pays an employee, she'd break you up the first month. There ain't no way that you can pay a wife to be a wife and mother and servant and a cook and maid and all that and your lover. There's no way. It costs too much. She's your partner, and I'll tell you what, you better look at her as a partner rather than as an employee, because if she ever submitted a bill for her services, buddy, you'd be out the first month that she submitted it. You haven't got a chance. Never. You're joint heirs. And you were designed to be over here, not over there. God didn't just put you together as acquaintances. He says, I want you to be one. But you can't get over from there to over here without going through there. And it's this area here, and this QT, the QT stands for quality time. Quality time. You're going to have to go through this quality time in order to get over into the area of loveship. And you do that through communication. And that is initiated by the husband. And that is reciprocated by the wife. But you need not expect to get from acquaintanceship over to loveship without going through quality time. Now, people who do this in courtship, who miss the quality time and try to get over there, all they get is infatuation. And you know, they're so infatuated and they're so physically attracted and they're so much in love. This is the kind of people that they fall in love. And they sometimes fall out of love unless they go through quality time. And whenever this falling in love passes, and whenever the butterflies start flying in order, and it's the chalk and cheese stage, when everything's kind of settled down, these people think that they don't love each other anymore. And the problem is that they don't, like they did over there. But God didn't intend for that to be permanent. He intends for this to be the permanent relationship. But in order to get here, you've got to go through this, and that comes through communication with each other as joint heirs, to where you sit down and you talk and you exchange and you communicate. And you give here, and she gives there, and you begin to blend. We're going to talk about more of this in detail tonight. But look at these points just for a few moments. How much time do you spend in quality time now? And I mean, quality time is time other than this time that says, it sure is muggy today, isn't it? Now, that's passing the time of day. You reckon it's going to rain? Or what did you do at the office today? Oh, not much. What happened at the house today? Now, it's nice to ask these things, but usually when he comes in, he's tired, you know, he says, what happened today? That's the wrong time. Don't tell him all that happened. If you tell him, well, the washing machine broke, the child broke his arm, and we ran out of food, don't do that right there. That just isn't the time. When you go to bed at night, you know, that's not the time to tell him about the budget being blown either. That's just not the time for a financial review. I mean quality time. The time when you simply take out and you sit there and you talk and you visit with each other and you get out into depths that are really meaningful. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment, about what it means to leave yourself open to be hurt. But these areas, do you ever spend any time talking intellectually with your wife? Do you ever ask her opinion about something? Or when you ask her opinion about it, you listen to it and then you dismiss it immediately. Oh, that won't work. And here we go. And all you meant was, well, I need to just simply show you the courtesy of asking you what you think about it, dum-dum. What do you think? And then she tells you what she thinks about it, and in effect you say, that is the most stupid thing I've ever heard of in my life. And then you go right on as though she never had opened her mouth. That's not quality time. That's suicide. Quality time intellectually, where you talk about things on an intellectual basis. Now, I don't mean that you have to be the intelligentsia, you know, and get all into all the qualitative analysis of this, that, and the other. That's not what I'm talking about. But just let her exercise her mind. She's a human. And let him exercise his mind if it's the other way around. He's a human. But usually it's the wife who's maybe at home with the children and all, and her day is a bit more mundane than yours. You're out running around, you know, visiting people, having lunch out, eating with all these folks, playing golf or tennis and whatever. And you come in, you say, how in the world are you, honey? She stands there with her hair all down in her face and the children hanging on her. And, you know, it's not quite the same. You need to spend a little time letting her associate with adults, too. How many times do you men spend your day going, goo, 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 goo? Hello, honey. Let's take off your diaper and change your diaper. Would you like some more Pablum, baby? How many men do you do? You don't know how to do that, do you? No. And you don't know what it takes out of a person to do that all day long either. So be careful. Let her have some time when she can talk to an adult too. She deserves it. What about emotionally? Times when you sit and you get this feedback between each other as to how you feel. And you do this without being defensive or offensive. You just are simply open. You say, tell me. And when she wants to tell you how she feels, for goodness sakes, listen to her. Oh, you must listen. You must never, as we know, and I'm saying these things as though they were built on the last lesson. You'll have to forgive that. But there are times when men cannot understand the emotional feeling of a woman. You might as well not try to understand it. All you can try to do is to be genuine enough and be open enough to accept that that's the way she feels. I don't understand why a woman, when she's pregnant, wants dill pickles and ice cream. I can't imagine anybody wanting that. What are some of you ladies, what have you eaten when you've been pregnant? What do you want? Come on. What do you want? Apple, okay, very good. Apples, I can understand that. That makes sense. Isn't she intelligent? Now, somebody give us the other side. Husbands, what were some of the things that your wife wanted when she was pregnant? Pickles. Oh, well, I do too, but you mean just pickles? Oh, that's awful. Just pickles. What is somebody else? By itself? Sauerkraut. That's the silliest thing I ever heard of in my life. But it's not silly to her. Things happen to a woman that you never will understand as a man. You can't. Have you ever had a baby? You men? You know, you can't understand how a woman goes through all this hormonal change when she becomes pregnant and she erps every time she sees food and she goes around gagging. You can't understand it. Who thought you ever would? But she's your body. Try to understand her and deal with some quality time with her during those times of trial. I'll tell you one thing, if you will, it'll be as good as money in the bank for you, because you're going to start welding together. This quality time is going to bring you over to here, to where she knows that you can't understand it, but you don't care. What you care about is her, and if that's the way she feels, buddy, that's good enough for you. And you'll get out in the middle of the night at 2 o'clock in the morning and look for that sauerkraut. If that's what's, you know, you pamper her and you pet her and you take care of her and you love her and you nourish her and you cherish her, that's the quality time. And so much of it is based right here in this emotional level. And the closer a woman gets to 40 years of age, you better, as a good husband, man, if you want somebody who is a real mate, and I mean by that a real partner, your life with that woman can get so rich by the time you get to be about 40 or 45 or 50, and you young people can't no more understand that. You laughing over that thinking, well, that's the silliest old man I ever heard. You wait. You just wait. You men, if you'll see to it that you spend quality time with that bride, buddy, you'll have to beat her off with a stick. She's going to be so tickled and proud of you. Why, I can't even start to describe it. I don't have time. All right, let's go on. Look here. What about socially? You ever go anywhere with her socially? Are you ever seen with her socially? Well, you ought to be. Are you always out with the boys? Well, now, there are a lot of men who are always out with the boys. I'm getting ready to marry a man and his wife. They're going to be married the last of August. And he's going to have some problems. You know why they didn't marry the last of September? He said, said dove season's on then. And I said, come again? Dove season? I thought, man, love season is on. And really, ducks, doves, any kind of hunting, you know, man, he's out there with the boys. And I love to hunt, too, and I love to fish. And my wife loves for me, too. But I'll tell you one thing. I let my wife know a long time ago that she was more important than any busload of deer, any boatload of fish, It didn't make any difference to me about any of that. I don't have to cuddle up to a fish at night. I want that wife, and I want her as part of me, and I want to be part of her. And we're going to spend some quality social time together. What about physical time? Oh, yeah, I want to be with her physically. I don't mean like that. I mean, do you ever do anything else with her physically? Louine and I, in the last year, I thought, I don't really like to be with her on the tennis court physically. Because I spend more of my time off the court chasing the ball than is normal. But we figured out a place where we can spend physical time together. We play racquetball. Boy, and is that fun. And you know what? She's taken on a whole new attitude about things. She had gotten the impression that I really didn't like to be with her in these physical exercise things. She just knew I didn't really like it. And I was communicating that. That's what I was communicating. Because I didn't. When I played tennis, I wanted to play with somebody like old Cliff. I whipped him the other night, but anyway, the other morning, just tore him up. But at least he gave me a fair go. 6-2, 6-3, 4-6. Yeah. I wasn't going to even announce that, but that's what happened. But you should see what happened when I gave her for a present a new racquetball and two new balls. Well, you'd thought I'd given her a fur coat. And now, twice a week, we're going to start again in August, twice a week, we go down to the racquetball courts at 8 o'clock in the morning, just as soon as we get the children off to school, and we spend an hour just knocking each other, back and forth in the ball, and sometimes it's each other, you run into each other. But what a beautiful experience, a physical association that lets the person know that, I really like to be with you. I've got to work on that too now. I'm working on it, but I've still got some work to do on that area. And then spiritually, are you able to spend quality time with him spiritually, or with her spiritually? If he's not a Christian, you can't. If she's not a Christian, you can't. That's why don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Because what fellowship does light have with darkness? And what communion is there between Christ and Belial, a temple of God with a temple of idols? He said, there's no communion between light and darkness. So here's a word of advice I told the young people last night. You'll never be one with a person with whom you cannot be one with them at the center of their life. And this, the spiritual aspect of a person, is the center of their life. And you may be able to be with that person intellectually, emotionally, socially, physically, but if you can't be with that person and be one with them at the center of their existence and of your existence, which is their spiritual relationship with God, if you can't be one with them there as Christians, you'll never, ever really be one. You'll always be on the outside looking into that person. You'll never be one with him. Now, let's look then quickly. In order to rebuild a marriage, this is a formula that absolutely is essential. Both partners have to seek the mind of Christ. Both of you. As long as just one partner seeks the mind of Christ, you're going to have problems. Though, at each point in life, somebody has to do more than the other person at that particular time to make a relationship between two people work. Either whether it's in the family between father and son, sometime or other the father may have to do more than the son, or the son more than the father, in order for that relationship to work. In a wife and husband relationship, invariably, somebody in that relationship at various times is going to have to put out more than they receive. But it ought never, between two Christians, it ought never to be one-sided to where the one always walks around tiptoeing on eggs for fear that she's going to upset or he's going to upset her. That ought never to be the case. In order for a marriage relationship to work, it has to be both partners seeking the mind of Christ. Usually, at least one person in a relationship must take the initiative to solve a communications problem. We're aware of that. It ought to be the husband. That's your responsibility, men. When you find that things are not like they ought to be, it's your responsibility to take the initiative. But now, wives, listen. More husbands would take the initiative if they suspected that their wife would be a gracious recipient and a reciprocator. Yeah. More of us would take the initiative if we thought that whenever we said to you, honey, let's not fight, let's talk about it. If they felt like they wouldn't get their head bit off, we'd more often take the initiative. So really, you see, it's a joint responsibility again. to communicate, to seek the mind of Christ, to make this relationship work, the husband is responsible for taking the initiative. But you as a wife are responsible for reciprocating and saying, all right, let's talk about it. And then you sit down and you begin to communicate and you begin to spend some quality time. I love to fight with my wife because making up, man, is so much fun. It's just fantastic. Every once in a while we'll get into it. They're seldom now. Used to it be regular, you know. Man, we just have it pretty well up and down. But in the last 8 or 10 years, well, I can count on one hand the times we've really been upset with each other. But I sure do enjoy those making ups. They are fun. We just have a blast making up. Or we'll go out to dinner, you know, and we'll just have such a great time. But we have a great time without the fights, without the arguments. It's coming to that. That's what happens when you're about 40, 44. You get to those times when it's mostly roses. The thorns, you know, are not there anymore. They've been dulled. Okay, now let's look again. Let me read you this. The miracle of a marriage. This is this same man, Lloyd Ogilvie. The miracle of a Christian marriage occurs when two minds seek the mind of Christ. Thought patterns, values, preconceptions, and expectations can be unified only as we seek to know and express His mind for us. Another word used to translate Paul's Philippian term, the mind of Christ, is disposition. Disposition is thought in personality expression. Our disposition in marriage is radically altered when it is shaped around Christ's person, power, and purpose. An emotionally loving Christian who has experienced the healing of his memories and has actually felt the penetration of Christ's love can express warmth with the gift of his emotions. Then when the will is liberated to deliberately seek Christ's will with a mate, God can unite two people in profound closeness as fellow adventurers in the new life. Marriage and the family become expressions of the kingdom of God. His rule within, between, and amongst. Now that's what it's about. That's what we mean when two people seek the mind of Christ. All right, now, for a brief exercise again, do you remember the first night, I believe, we talked about the mind of Christ as it is revealed in the Beatitudes, and then we translated those Beatitudes into marriage language? I want you to give yourself a rating now. If you will, mark down one for every one of these that you find yourself working along and you're doing okay with it. All right? Are there some cards or something there? Okay. We've got more people here that need to do this test than we do for people who are visitors. Those of you that are visitors, take one and fill it out on the front, turn the thing over, and on the back, take a pencil out of there and make a mark. Now you're going to have a chance to make 80. Chance to make 80. That's good. Come on, everybody, let's try it and see what happens. You know, you'll be able to get a pretty good idea about where you are. And let's do it quickly now. Let's translate the Beatitudes into marriage language. The poor in spirit translates, I was wrong. Now, if you are able to say, I was wrong, put your one there. If you find it terribly difficult to ever admit that you were wrong, put a zero. Okay. Number two, blessed are they that mourn, translates, I'm sorry, forgive me. Do you find it terribly hard to say, I'm sorry? Or forgive me. If so, put a zero there. But if you're on your way and you're able to do that fairly well, put your one. All right. Number three, blessed are the meek. That means that you say, let's do what's best for you. The wife is aware that her husband is in need of emotional release and sexual union. She's aware of that. She says, let's do what's best for you. She may take a nap during the afternoon so she'll be able to that night. And then the husband, though, he's aware that his wife is not well. That husband says, honey, let's do what's best for you. And you're not feeling well. Come on, let's go play checkers or let's do something else. But you're not feeling well. Or you're being cared for by a doctor or whatever. Or you're pregnant or, you know, and it's you're about a week from delivery, whatever. And you say, look, let's just do what's best for you. Number four, if you're willing to do that, and listen, men, man, I find that you better look real close at yourself at this area here. Because you'll rationalize her into good health.
Yeah, you'll rationalize her into good health. You know, migraine headache, oh, I know that kind of gets to you, but after all, you know, you've had it for 2 days, you ought to be over it by now. Boy, put a one or a zero there, depending on whether you rank and how you rank. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, says, let's do what's right regardless. We're going to do what's right regardless. Now, that means when you've considered splitting up with that wife, you know it's not right, you're going to say, I'm going to do what's right regardless. And when you're being asked to change, if though it hurts, you're going to say, I'm going to do what's right regardless. All right, put a one or a zero. Blessed are the merciful, translates, I forgive you. And it never is to be brought up again. Now, when you forgive your husband, do you ever bring it back up and throw it in his face again? Ever? You drag, you open the closet door and drag out all these discolored skeletons and all. You become historical with him, as we said the other day, instead of hysterical, just historical. Bring up all these things out of the past. I forgive you. Blessed are the pure in heart, I trust you completely. With whatever, with my name, I trust my wife completely with my name. When I left home, it never has ever occurred to me that she was going to act in a way that would disgrace me. Never. I can never think of a single time ever that I thought she would disgrace me. I can leave my checkbook with her and just tell her, use it like you think it's best. I have never, ever thought that she would use it in an extravagant manner. Man, she is so watchful of the budget, I could just turn over all the finances of the family to her and just say, honey, use it like you want to, use it like you think best. And she'd do a fantastic job with it. I trust her completely. No suspicions that she's going to waste it. No suspicions of any kind like that. Oh, boy. You're talking about helping a marriage grow. A woman that gets that idea about the way her husband looks at her and he has that much respect for her and trust, and he just says, I trust you completely. Why, she's free to be herself. If she sees a bargain of shoes, my wife bought 8 pairs of shoes one day. You know why? She found a bargain. She could get them for $2 a piece. So she spent $16 on shoes, but it lasted her the next 10 years. She's not hard on shoes. Well, I was as tickled that she had spent that money. I didn't know where, you know, we didn't maybe have it, but I found it. She's more important to me than the $16. Okay, pure in heart, I trust you completely. The peacemakers, let me be the first to make up. Now, that's what it means to be a peacemaker. Let me be the first to make up. Now, here we go. Those of you that usually are the ones that come to the wife or the husband and say, look, let's not argue. You put you a one. And those of you who are the ones to whom the other one has to come, and when they say, let's not argue, you say, you're right. You put a number one, too. But those of you that just cannot bring yourself to go to your wife or husband and say, look, I'm sorry, let's not argue. If you can't bring yourself to do that, then you put a zero. And if when the mate comes to you and says that to you, you just simply sit there in silence or stand there, you know, at the kitchen sink and you never budge. You put a zero there. Don't you claim a one if you're that way. Blessed are the persecuted. Whenever you're having a hard day, the other one says, I'm willing to take up for you. I'm willing to suffer for you. I'm willing to make allowance for your bad days. Put a one there. But if every time the other one has a bad day, man, it's just like kicking a cat. Or it's just like running in an old bulldog. You just get here you go again. You're a nothing. You're a liar. You takes one to know one. And every time something happens, put a zero if you like that. Now, look, let's go. Let me show you how to do this. How can you become like this? It takes three things. The key to reconstruction or the rebuilding is found in 1 Peter 4 or 1 Peter 3. In verses 8 and 9, listen to what it says. After he gets through talking to the wives, and after he gets through talking to the husbands, then in verse 8, after he says to the wife, be this, 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 and this, these 6 things, and then he says to the husband, be these 3 things, then he says, finally. In other words, I'm going to wrap it all up. Finally, do this. Finally, all of you have unity of spirit, sympathy, and love. He says love of the brethren here, but your wife is your number one brethren. She's your number one neighbor. Finally, and so the first thing that he mentions, let's just wrap it all up and say, you've got to have sympathy. That's the number one key to rebuilding a marriage. You've got to have sympathy. In other words, you've got to be feeling with the other person. You've got to put yourself in his shoes. You've got to put yourself in her shoes. He's been out working hard all day. He's been out in this muggy Mississippi weather. It's just terrible. And if he's had to get in and out, you know, and be in that stuff all day, he's tired when he gets home. You be aware of that. You've got to be sympathetic of her. She's been at home working hard all day long. Be sympathetic. Walk in her shoes before you criticize her. Be sympathetic. That's what he's saying here. Do to her like you'd like to be done for yourself. Put yourself in the other person's shoes. But then the second thing he mentions in verse 8, be of a tender heart and a humble mind. You know what that has reference to? It has reference to honesty. Honesty. Tender heart and a humble mind. Now, we think of honesty sometimes as having a hair-trigger mouth. Well, if one thing I am, I'm honest. In other words, she means, or he means, that whenever you've got a fault, they don't hide it and be hypocritical. They just blast you out of the saddle right quickly, you know, right off the bat, and they're real honest with you. That's not honest. That's obnoxious. The honesty I'm talking about that Simon Peter was referring to is being not ready to always tell the truth about somebody. It's being open to the truth about yourself. It's related to the Psalm 139 where he says, let's read it. He says, test me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts and see if there be any wicked way in me. And the word wicked there in the Hebrew means hurtful. See if I'm doing anything to hurt my wife. See if I'm doing anything to hurt my husband. Try me and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. And see if I'm doing anything that's hurtful. And lead me in the paths everlasting. That's what I'm talking about when I say you've got to be honest. You've got to be sympathetic. But more than that, you've got to be honest as you look at yourself. Sympathetic refers to your empathy with the other person. Honest means that you're open to yourself and your own flaws, your own faults. Yeah. How many of you husbands came to this week just because your wife wanted you to come? And a couple jokingly have said to me, oh, you know, I only came for her. And I said, brother, you're right. That's exactly why you're here. It's for her. Because you're the one, you're where the correction is needed. And the one woman said, he needs all of this. No, what was it? She said I forget that what it was she said, but anyway, it was couched in a way that when she explained it, she meant that he needed all the help he could get to live with her. And these that have said, yeah, I'm just here for my wife, you know, then they laugh and say, yeah, they understand. But how many of you really feel like that you don't really need to be here? That it's your husband that ought to be here? Well, that's probably true. He does need to be here. And I suspect that there are more wives here without their husbands than there are husbands here without their wives. Because we husbands, you know, we don't like to admit that we're wrong. Ain't nothing wrong with me. It's my wife. She's the nut. She's the screwball. She's the one that's got a screw loose. I don't need marriage counseling. How many times have I heard that? I get so sick of hearing husbands say, I don't need marriage counseling. It's my wife. You spell his name Clod, C-L-O-D. And he lives in Searcy, he lives here, he lives everywhere. Blind as a bat, couldn't see through a ladder with one eye, he just couldn't do nothing. Everything's fine. Oh, mercy, don't get me started. Peter says, be of a tender heart and a humble mind. Look, Lord, I don't want to be wrong. And you tell your wife, then, and that's the next thing he mentions here, never returning evil for evil, but always blessing. And that third point, I think, could be called vulnerability. Vulnerability. Whenever he abuses you, don't abuse him back. Whenever she abuses you and says catty things to you, don't bark back at her. Be willing to be vulnerable. And I mean by that, be willing to lay your life down for your wife. Be willing to lay your life down for your husband. Now, he talks about it in terms here of not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless, for to this you've been called, so that you might obtain a blessing. Now, he says if you want really to be happy, he says this is the way to do it. Don't always be yow-yowing at each other. Don't return evil for evil or reviling for reviling.
No meaningful relationship can exist without both partners leaving themselves open to be hurt. Now, that's true in any relationship. No real relationship can exist, no true one can exist, without both partners leaving themselves open to be hurt. And when you confess to your wife, "I've been insensitive to you," what if she just simply says, "You sure have, you're the most ter-," then just simply say, "Well, I know that." Or when you confess to your husband, you know, something, I've been nagging you," and he just lashes back at you, well, don't return evil for evil or reviling for reviling. Leave yourself open to be hurt, for no meaningful relationship can exist without both partners leaving themselves open. And you say, "Well, what if you're willing to be vulnerable and your mate isn't?" Well, do it regardless. Do it regardless. If he's a Christian, then, or if she's a Christian, and after working at it year after year after year, if you see that there's no improvement, then you need to go to the elders and say, "We need help." And don't be too proud to go to the elders and say, "Look, I've tried everything I've known for 10 years. He is still, or she is still, the most immature person I have ever seen. Our marriage is going down the drain. Will you please help us?" Now, wives, let me tell you this. These men serve as elders over this congregation for this purpose. Men, let me tell you this. These men serve over this body of people, these elders do, for this purpose. Whenever you need help and it is beyond you and you've done everything you can, you've laid your life down, you've sacrificed yourself, if it is still not working, then to continue to ignore it is to do so at the expense of your mate's well-being and at the expense of your marriage's well-being. And you need to go to the elders and say, "We need help." And if that scares him to death, say, "All right, I'm sorry. So be it, but I'm going for help." Or if it just makes her with the nervous jitters, say, "I'm sorry, dear, but I can't let you go on like this. We've got to have help." And may I urge you from the bottom of my soul, don't let a marriage bleed to death. Go do something about it. Now, one final thing as we close. And this one question may open up the windows that will let the fresh air into your marriage that it needs. If you love Christ with all your heart, what are three things that you would do to express His love to your mate? If you love Christ with all your heart. Now, isn't that what Christians are? Aren't we a people who love our mates with all of our, love Christ with all our hearts? Isn't that who we are? If that's not a Christian, what is a Christian? All right, if you love Christ with all your heart, think of three things that you could do to your mate that would express His love to your mate. Think of three things that you know she wants, really she wants, that are constructive and that are positive. Think of three things. Oh, and I mean just simple things like, but maybe she just needs to be reaffirmed and her your love for her needs to be reaffirmed. All right, whatever the three things are. And it may be that she really just wants for you and her to go away for a weekend together. Or whatever. All right, I'm going to give you a challenge. You think of three things that your wife or your husband, that you know that if you gave those things to her, and one of those things ought to be yourself, but you know that if you did that, and you watch what'll happen. Okay, that's the lesson for the morning. That'll turn these acquaintances into real loveship by spending quality time intellectually, emotionally, socially, physically, spiritually, by being sympathetic, by being honest, and by being vulnerable. You'll bring into that relationship the mind of Jesus Christ, and I just guarantee it. Your marriage is on the way up. It's on the way to being rebuilt. I pray to God that this will be the case in our marriages here.